Tuesday, and today we're going to talk about a terror attack in Flint. It was only a matter of time before it came to Michigan. We've talked about it so many times. Ford's going to China. Big Oil is wasting money. Obamacare is in the toilet. And Trump's brand, well, apparently it's stronger than what the Democrats have, isn't it? We'll talk about this and so much more, but I need you to be ready. Get your pencil sharpened, get your knickers on, and let's do this. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And welcome to it. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Thursday. And we have got a big program for you today, including Ryan Morrow will be here from the Clarion Project to talk about the dangers of the northern border. This comes the day after a Canadian man from Quebec, a 50-year-old Canadian man from Quebec, starts screaming Allahu Akbar while stabbing a police officer at Bishop International Airport in Flint. The officer survives, but apparently it was a brutal scene. The 50-year-old man apparently attacking in the name of terrorism. That's what the FBI is doing now. They are investigating it as terrorism. Amor Fatui arrested. Now, what's not clear to me is, and this will come out as we move along, but what's not clear to me is what stopped the attack. And then officers and a maintenance worker who witnessed the attack and apparently had him under control at some point, Fatui asked why they didn't kill him. Apparently there was an unsung hero that saw what happened, came to his aid, to his help, said Flint Mayor Karen Weaver. Had she not been in that place at that time, it could have been much worse. Lieutenant Neville never stopped fighting, until the person was handcuffed. But I asked this recently. I said, how long? I've asked a few times, how long until hell descends upon Michigan in the form of Islamic terrorism wreaking havoc on our streets? I said that when the connection between London's latest attack and a Michigan man, Sheikh Ahmed Musa Jibril, was made, you have to wonder what's going on here. As Jibril sits in Dearborn, preaching hate, one of the top ISIS recruiters in the world, we are told, and we do nothing about it, of course, freedom of speech. But if you're inciting riots, if you're inciting attack, if you're inciting violence of this sort, there seems to be something we can do. At the time I looked online, Sheikh Jibril has dozens of lectures on his own YouTube channel online. He proselytizes on topics that include never reuniting with Rafitas and the evils of democracy. Rafita, of course, is you and I. It's another word for infidel. And the evils of democracy because it runs contrary to the rule of the Quran and there is no law. But the law of God, he preaches. Rafita is you and I, of course. And that's anyone that does not accept the legitimacy of Islamic authority and Islamic leadership. That'd be me, by the way. Might be you too, I'm guessing. Jibril can be seen hour after hour on YouTube pounding away at the theme that his version of Islam is the only way. Islam, he says, in fact, is the only way and will never accept or unite with anyone that thinks differently. Muslim or non, He's clear about this. He rejects democracy in any form and says it has no standing, and the only authority in Islam is Allah. Jibril, born in Michigan, lives in Dearborn, been cited on numerous occasions by government officials. A report published in 2014 by the International Center of the Study for the Radicalization and Political Violence named Jibril specifically as a central figure whose messages are used to recruit those who are susceptible to the message of violence and murder in the name of Islam. Now, do we know if this gentleman from Quebec was connected? I don't know, but I mean, you're looking at somebody here. You're looking at somebody right here who is a recruiter for ISIS, outspoken on the internet, proclaiming that democracy is illegitimate. The only legitimate leadership comes from the Quran. This is where he disseminates his theology of hate. He also uses other forms of social media. And that message of hate is spread worldwide from its epicenter in Dearborn, Michigan, and infects possibly thousands of viewers and followers around the world. It's a relief that Officer Neville is okay, will survive. I mean, it's an incredibly fortunate situation that he survived that attack. The knifeman, his only goal was to kill somebody and be a martyr. At least that's what it would indicate. The crazy thing is, even after the FBI comes out and says this is what happened, people at other networks were like, well, we can't determine, you know, what the cause is here. We're not sure what the motive is. You know, I'm pretty sure what the motive is. When I hear somebody yelling Allahu Akbar, attacking a police officer, attacking anybody else in public with no apparent provocation, you know, I'm good enough at this that I can do the math. I can connect the dots. How about you? There it was. There's a group of people setting up at Bishop Airport for a meeting, public safety partners in the county. And they were only 10 to 15 feet away when the attack happened at Flint, including Lieutenant Dan Owens and a maintenance person, Richard Cruel. I witnessed the attack, said Cruel. Myself and Owen said this, and myself and Chief Miller responded to it fairly quickly. He's a good friend of mine. It was very terrifying to see something that quick, and luckily we were in a very, very close distance to respond. No indication that Fatui even spoke to Neville or had contact with anyone inside the airport. He had a 12-inch knife with a green handle and a black 8-inch serrated blade. His only goal was to kill somebody. To put blood on the ground, to become a martyr, and to go to heaven, I suppose. Is this the new normal? Because I certainly hope not. I hope that we can get past this. It's time to move past it. It's time to address this. And it's time to address the northern border, not just the southern border as well. 14 after. We'll be right back.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. Oh, there were many things I didn't know.
In the divided nation we live in politically, a lot of conversations about, you know, Donald Trump being unpopular. Well, newsflash. The Democrats don't seem to be carrying much of a message or much of a brand these days based on their 0-4 performance, or is it 0-5, whatever it is, in these special elections in Congress. They dumped close to $30 million into the Georgia 6th Congressional District special election. Had all sorts of predictions from the national media and the Democrats that they were going to have a big win there with John Ossoff. Then they thought, well, we could lose by a point. They lost by 6. And somehow try to claim that as a moral victory. the problem for some, the problem specifically for Nancy Pelosi and others leading the Democratic Party is the message isn't working anymore. The message of identity politics and divide and conquer and find little pockets of people to vote for you isn't working. And as unpopular as Donald Trump is in some areas, and he is unpopular in some areas, it's not enough. It's not enough to get the Democrats into office, it seems. So Nancy Pelosi and other top Democrats putting on their brave face after the devastating, and some people trying to downplay it, Slate and Vox and Politico, but it was a devastating loss for Democrats. It was embarrassing, frankly, all the money put in, all the posturing and all the, you know, puffery, I suppose. The Democrats outspent the Republicans 7-1. And John Ossoff lost by 6 points to Karen Handel anyway. So the brand of progressive politics and policies being offered to America being rejected. Americans can see what's happening in Europe and elsewhere. And they don't want that. The question is, will Nancy Pelosi survive? As the speaker, that is. Some Democrats now openly talking about replacing Pelosi. So if there's ever a change come, say, 2018, if the Democrats can swing the 24 or 25 seats they need to take the advantage in the House, do they really want Nancy Pelosi back as Speaker? In fact, Congressman Philemon Vela of Texas, Philemon Vela, said this, "I think you'd have to be an idiot to think we could win the House with Pelosi at the top. Nancy Pelosi is not the only reason that Ossoff lost, but she certainly is one of the top reasons," he said. Kathleen Rice, a Democrat from New York, member of Congress, who backed a challenge of Pelosi last year, said, "The results of the Ossoff race further underscore that Pelosi should let someone else take the reins. There comes a time," she said, "when even party leaders have to say, for the good of the order and for the betterment of the party, it's time for me to step aside, and I wish that would happen right now. This is not a personal thing. I want to get back in the majority." Tim Ryan, Ohio, who challenged Pelosi for the minority leadership in November, wouldn't comment directly, saying, "Only my position hasn't changed. I think it's very concerning that the tactic still has some punch," Ryan said. "Again, it's part of the broader national brand that average people don't feel connected to the Democratic Party." There it is. Average people don't feel connected to the Democratic Party. Walk up the street and ask 10 people what the Democrats stand for. You'll get 10 different answers. That is no way to build a national party or a coalition or a leadership team. Pelosi told her members in a closed-door meeting yesterday morning that Ossoff was, quote, "a candidate who was young and enthusiastic and attracted national support." She also pointed out that Ossoff lost by only a small margin in the 6th Congressional District, smaller than the previous Democratic candidate for the seat in November. However, she failed to point out that he underperformed the predictions of what they said would happen, and he far outperformed, or should far underperformed Donald Trump, who only won the district by a point and a half. So Karen Handel far outperformed by beating Ossoff in that district, and the Democrats have no message. They haven't any message. All right, going for a lot to cover today. We're going to do some different things as well. Talk about survival on the open ocean. We're going to talk about politics in Michigan and Ramadan and terrorism, what it means. By the way, in the first quarter of 2017, congratulations, because state and local income taxes have hit an all-time record at over $95 billion. That was up 5% almost from the year before in constant 2017 dollars. Prior to this, 2016 held the record for first quarter for state and local income tax collections. So here's the question. How do we keep falling farther and farther behind when we have more and more money coming into the coffers? And how do state and local politicians also keep saying, "Well, we need more taxes. We need more taxes. We need more." Everybody says we need more taxes. Well, we've got a debt problem. Well, no, we don't have a debt problem. We have a spending problem. We have a fiscal control problem. We have a problem with controlling the pocketbook and you controlling your urge to spend the money. You know, just because you have it doesn't mean you have to spend it. I learned that when I was 5 years old from my grandfather. Just because you have it doesn't mean you have to spend it, but that's the way these politicians seem to act oftentimes. All-time record income, and yet debts go up, deficits go up. Places like Illinois teetering on bankruptcy, and it, you know, it's inexcusable to me. Also, Anthem is pulling out of Obamacare altogether in the Midwest, citing a volatile market. The second largest health insurer in America told us yesterday it plans to pull out of Obamacare exchanges in Indiana and Wisconsin, fueling the Republican calls on Capitol Hill to upend the law. Anthem said planning and pricing for the ACA compliant health plans has become increasingly difficult due to a shrinking and deteriorating individual market. Yeah, they've successfully destroyed health care coverage in America to some extent. Can the Republicans save it, and can they save it in time? It's an important question. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk about survival on the open oceans and much more straight ahead on The Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show, American values with Midwestern common sense.
Five after on this Thursday. Glad to have you here with the Steve Gruber Show with the conversation. As we talked about a bit earlier, Anthem is pulling out of Obamacare in the Midwest, leaving Indiana and Wisconsin, they say, next year, which means another hit for Obamacare. And Anthem's reason for leaving is the instability of the private market and everything else that's going on with it. My next guest, Roger Abramson, General Counsel for Ameriflex. Roger, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, here it is, yet another insurer saying that this is not a law that's workable, not a situation that's workable for them or their shareholders. If left to its own devices, if you will, and if the Republicans don't intervene, which they could sometime soon, but if they don't, how long would this all last before it collapses?
Well, you know, as I said before, and often say that, you know, the word collapse sort of implies a, you know, 1 or 2 second event, and I liken it sort of leaves falling off a tree in autumn. They go and they go, and all of a sudden you look out and they're gone. And
all right, how about this? Mm-hmm. How long until the emperor has no clothes?
That's
if
true.
It takes a little bit here and a little bit
that's
there.
True. I will say exactly that's a perfect analogy. On that particular one though, we are far beyond where we were this time last year. For instance, when we had President Obama in office, and there was still a lot of spin going on from his party that things were fine and things were fine. We don't have to worry about that so much now, given the situation. And as we saw yesterday, which of course was the deadline for insurers across the country to submit their plans to the federal government for what was going to be on the federal exchanges. And it looks like, we're still tallying up the numbers, that 40% of counties in the country now are only going to have one insurer on those exchanges, which essentially at that point becomes a monopoly. They're not even competing against each other.
And they're prepping folks for the single payer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're just getting people right. Prepped for a single payer system because you only have one option. Here's your option. Obamacare right. May not be dying, but it is circling the drain.
Yeah, so for those counties, it's like, you know, right, exactly. Well, you may say you don't like single payer, but look, you got it now, and see how that goes. Which is interesting to point out and see in other parts of the news, as you've alluded to, today or tomorrow, the Senate is unveiling, allegedly, their plan, which is going to be their response to the House bill. I find that timing interesting, given that it did happen after yesterday's deadline, probably planned. And I think that's going to give the political impetus to them to show, look, you've got, you know, 40% of counties in America are only going to have one insurer next year on these exchanges. It's only going to get worse next year. You've got major carriers, for instance, you point out Anthem, pulling out of the Midwest, which, again, politically speaking, is a major stronghold for Republicans and, of course, has put President or Donald Trump into office. So I think you're going to see that political impetus there that they were kind of waiting for. They've been kind of whispering about that. They've been waiting for yesterday's numbers. And we're going to see that Senate plan unveiled. What it's going to be is going to be our next problem. It's going to be something probably a little more lenient in terms of pre-existing conditions and so forth than what came out of the House. But other than that, we're still kind of in a wait-and-see mode.
So here we are looking at all of these insurance companies saying we're on our way out. These are the same insurance companies, by the way, here is a case of collusion that actually exists. And this was between the Democrats and the insurance companies, because the insurance companies lined their pockets when the Democrats declared that Americans had to buy X, Y, and Z and were forced to do so. I mean, it was great for your bottom line of the insurance companies as long as the taxpayers were guaranteed to cover the difference in case you didn't make your profit margin as expected.
Right.
But when the government stopped doing that, when Marco Rubio intervened and got rid of those risk corridors the way they were first designed in part, it changed everything. And the insurance company said, we're not going to stick around if you're not going to force the taxpayers to pay us. I mean, it's a mess from top to bottom, yes or no?
It is a mess from top to bottom, absolutely. And in fact, remember, the insurers said they're the ones who worked with or colluded with the Obama administration earlier on, said we're not going to do this without that individual mandate. We can't, is their argument. Perhaps that's a valid argument from their point of view. We can't cover these high-risk folks if you don't make sure you get those low-risk folks in place. But now we have the deal where, as you point out, Senator Rubio cut off the risk corridor part, which is it's a prop-up. I mean, that's what it is. It's what I call a reverse bailout. You bail out after things fall apart. The prop-up is we're going to try and keep it from falling apart as much as possible. But, you know, as you're probably alluding to and as I sympathize with to a great degree, you know, at some point, if something needs propped up constantly or bailed out, something is wrong. Find another solution. And hopefully we will find out what
that is. You can't bail out the boat constantly. At some point, the boat sinks.
Right.
You can't continue to bail the
boat
sinks,
and you still never get to where you're trying to go. So
that's right.
So maybe
you never make landfall.
Right. So hopefully the Senate, you know, working with the folks in the Trump administration are going to come up with something that will fix this problem. But I will say, yesterday's events where you see these insurers pulling out, the deadline has passed. There's not a lot going to be covered. I think you're going to see President Trump starting going around beating the hustings. He's probably the best person at the bully pulpit, and then that's not a pro or anti-Trump statement, just it's a fact than we've seen probably since President Reagan, to get people riled up about something, taking a few facts and moving the ball down the field. I think that's what you're going to see over the next couple of weeks.
So are we going to, and this will be your last thought, I'll give you the final word on this. Are we going to be in a better place a year from now than we are today? I mean, taking a few facts and moving the ball down the field, getting people lathered up. Are the Republicans going to get us to a better place? Democrats created this mess. The private insurance industry has been altered permanently forever, most likely.
Thoughts? I went to law school, so any sense of optimism I once had when I entered went away. That was part of their job. What I'll say is a year from now, it's going to be much different. It will probably be better, only in the sense we'll have a little more stability. What I cannot say with a lot of certainty is that stability is going to be long term. It will be short.
We got to leave it right there.
Midterms. And that's where we're going to.
Roger Abramson, good conversation. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me. Hope to have you again. Talk to you. Bye bye.
From Ameriflex, there you have it. He made me chuckle. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Thursday. We'll be right back.